You were created to dream dreams. Not just to fantasize, but to dream real dreams that would take form and shape and come alive. You were destined to be the architect of a new world, your own life, and to create patterns and experiences, events and relationships, new things, new forms and new shapes that you can walk out into and actually experience, because they're not just silent dreams of your mind, but the dreams that become your real world, your real experience. One of the great paradoxes of our human nature, however, is that inertia is the driving force in many, if not most, of our basic decisions. Our unwillingness to make a move moves us more than any other factor. So it's startling that while we are spiritual beings, we are of the heavens, for long seasons on this earth, we spend our time inert, locked into old forms and shapes, and with an inertia that motivates us. And since you are a being, a creature that was destined to know great movement or motion, energy being transformed into experiences, if you have not yet chosen to move out into this movement, utilizing the energy of life of the universe, letting it reform and reshape your world, then you become stagnant. And a person who is not in motion will in time become a crisis creator. Because if you are a person who does not believe in achieving goals, you must, in that non-belief of goals, create the excitement and the fulfillment that your heart intuitively desires by creating crises, which are the result of having non-goals. The word crises means, by definition, a crucial point or situation in the course of anything, a turning point, or the point in a story or drama at which hostile forces are in the most tense state of opposition. If we are not moving forward into new experiences, we are in opposition to ourselves. And if we're in opposition to ourselves, then that in time becomes a crisis or a turning point, because the word crisis comes from the Greek word meaning turning point. Your life is a story. It's a drama that's unfolding. And if by chance your self-created crises can, those problems that have recently afflicted you and caused you pain, and perhaps it was that very crisis that brought you here this evening, but that can be the most important turning point that you've ever experienced in your life. It can be the thing that gets you back on track and starts you moving forward again into a new reality and into exciting new experiences. But just in case that in recent weeks you have not been a being in motion, let me catch you up with a synopsis of last week's soap opera happenings, because if you have not been living your own life, you'll need to know what's going on in the lives of those other important relationships that capture our attention. And you probably missed the fact that last week, in all my children, Erica's revelation to Phoebe about Charlie's parentage drove Phoebe to a drunken spree that ruined Erica's dinner party. Now, Wally's mother threatened legal action to stop Mark and Ellen from adopting Devon's baby. Estelle spilled the beans to Chuck that Donna thinks she's pregnant. Frank assured Caroline that she has no reason to be jealous of Nancy, and Jeff and Chris left for San Francisco, where Chris was determined to accept a job offer and never return to Pine Valley. And on the basis of what I just read to you, I don't blame him. Tom got fed up with Erica's deceits, and Billy pleaded for Estelle to return. In another world, Susan agreed to a divorce because Dan wants to marry Alice before Olive's baby is born. As the world turns, Kevin was struck by a car and died on the operating table from complications of cirrhosis of the liver. I wonder why they didn't just let the accident kill him. Days of Our Lives, Maggie and Doug commiserated about the absence of children in their respective marriages, since Mickey was impotent and Julie is preoccupied with her business. Oh dear. Well, you can see if we don't have a life of our own, we've got to live someone else's life. And most people don't have a life of their own because they have settled down into the stagnation that comes from non-movement, from not having goals and moving forward into the exciting new events that they were destined to create. Two of you, a couple, who happens to be here this evening, wrote me. About a month ago, we decided that our goals weren't progressing as much as we wanted them to, and we had to act. So we looked around for our stumbling blocks. We realized we wanted more out of life, but we saw that we were spending too much time just watching television. And so we unplugged the television and covered it with a piece of cloth. And then we wrote on the cloth, quote, "We will make our own dreams." Since then, we've been working much harder. We've been creating new pictures, new goals, and it's amazing how rapidly our lives seem to be moving again. If you don't create your own images, your mind will automatically pick up on other forms and shapes and will try to make them its own. And that becomes a non-life because it is not from you and of you. In the news, there is an article that's carried each day. It's called "It Happened to Me," and readers like you and me write in about experiences that we have had. And yesterday, the reader wrote, "For years after I became of marriageable age, at every business and social function, particularly at weddings, I was bombarded with questions, as I am sure many women have been, such as, 'When are you going to get married? Why aren't you married? Aren't you interested in getting married? Isn't yours a lonely life, not being married?' I finally decided for future defense that I should have a pat answer for anyone and everyone who challenged me, so I chose this humorous phrase. When I meet a man with 6 children and no wife, I might think about it." Several years passed, and I received an unexpected call from a relative who said he had just met the right man for me. He had 6 children and no wife, and he was eager to arrange a meeting. In May, we will celebrate our 16th happy, blessed wedding anniversary. And the point is, you better be careful about those humorous phrases. Your dreams, your statements, have a way of coming alive and becoming your experience. William Faulkner wrote that the end of wisdom is to dream high enough not to lose the dream in the seeking of it. Now, in these earlier lessons, I have asked you to prepare the soil of your mind and then to plant in that soil a new garden, a new crop, new seeds that will produce a series of exciting new experiences that you have chosen. If you will talk to any knowledgeable and successful gardener, he will tell you that you must always be prepared to do some weeding. For one reason, there simply is not enough room for every seed to grow in the area that has been assigned it, and you will have to take some of those seeds out. And besides that, some of the seeds that you plant will always be weed seeds. And the weed seeds will always have a tendency to absorb the energy, the nutrients from the soil that should go into the good seeds, the good plants. So, it would be virtually impossible for you to have made the long and continuing list of goals, dreams, those things that you have decided you wish to experience, to have, and to be for the rest of your life, and not in that process have planted some weeds. At the time that you were making your list, it was okay. I suggested that you write down all of the things that came to you. But now the time has come to go back over your list and prepare to prune it somewhat. For example, one lady came to me last week and said, and looking over my list, I discovered that I have too many goals that have to do with traveling. I wanted to go to Europe and to South America and to Africa and Australia and to the East Coast and the West Coast and down south and up north. And I discovered that what I really wanted to was to escape where I am. You get the point? You will see that there are some goals that you have that are significant, perhaps, but not really important in the overall framework, the complete pattern that you've now established. Be perfectly willing and even eager to go in and take some of these out because they are counterproductive. That's all right. It's important that you do this. Now that you have established some important goals for your life, it's time to begin to develop your plan, or I should say your plans for the unfoldment of these important goals. You see, if you have a goal that's important enough to have, that goal should be given the honor of a plan to bring it into fruition. You should honor it by considering it, by thinking about it, by loving it, by working with that goal and establishing a plan. For example, suppose that you have had a dream for many years to move into a newer, nicer neighborhood and into a larger, lovelier home or apartment. Make a plan. Think about all the details. Let your wonderful mind go to work on it. What are the first things you will need to do to accomplish your goal? Write them down. And then after you've written down what you think is the first order of things, then write down what will be involved next. Plan it just like you would plan a military operation. And remember that plans are not perfect, nor are they ever complete. They can always be changed. In fact, plans should be changed as the process develops and unfolds, in the very same way that a general in time of war would change his plans to meet with the changing of the conditions that would take place on the battlefield. Well, your life is not a battlefield exactly. Although sometimes it seems that way. But be prepared to hang loose with your plans and to let them be reformed and reshaped. Would you like to be a better, happier homemaker, for example? And that is for many of the ladies that are here, an exalted goal. Then make a plan. Would you like to get your office or your work reorganized and have it become more effective? Make a plan. Then make yourself follow your plan. Frank Richardson was a salaried employee working for a small company. He had nothing against his job. It paid fairly good money, even if he was always broke. He knew that he would never earn too much working for the company. It was a comfortable job, but the president didn't make all that much. And he blamed a great deal of his money problems on his wife's mismanagement and the high cost of living. He had many excuses for how things were. But you understand Frank Richardson, don't you? After all, he made more money than lots of people he knew. His job was too good to quit, but not good enough to keep. And so he just kept drifting along. But deeper than money, he felt unfulfilled and uncompleted. And one day, he picked up a magazine, a Reader's Digest, I think it was, and opened it to a page, and there was a sentence that changed his life, and it read, No successful house was ever built. No successful sale was ever made. No successful life was ever lived without a plan. Plan? Frank said. What if I had a plan? All I do is go to work. I know what I'm going to do all day long, and I do it, and I come home. My life is so simple, I don't need a plan. But the idea would not let him go, and so after a week or two of thinking about it, he decided to plan what he would do on his next weekend off, and so he wrote it down. Up at such and such a time, he thought about the things that he had to do, and it occurred to him that it would be a good idea to get the important things out of the way first on that Saturday morning. And so he let his imagination begin to run loose to help him design a really good Saturday and a really good Sunday. It took him about an hour to plan a weekend, something he never had done before. And a remarkable thing happened. He found himself looking forward to that weekend all week. He had never looked forward to a weekend in his life. And it worked like a miracle. He thought it would be difficult to stick to his plan, but he forgot one of the basic laws of mind action. And that is, when you drop a plan in the subconscious mind and ask the subconscious mind to cooperate with you in forming or shaping something, then the subconscious mind goes to work to help you to carry out the plan that it helps you to form. It executes that plan for you and will not let you forget it. Well, the result was the most interesting and productive weekend of his life. And so, the weekend was so good that he began planning his work day and his free time. He started planning everything. If he had 15 minutes, he'd plan it. Now, he never felt chained to his plan. If something unexpected came up, he rolled with the punch because he had read something else by this time about non-resistance and decided that he would not resist interruptions or unexpected developments, but would make a friend of all these things. If something seemed to get in the way, he would not react with anger, but he would smile and compliment the thing that was getting in his way. Well, needless to say, Frank became a changed person. And because he was a changed person, and life is consciousness, it wasn't long before an opportunity for another job came along. It was the most natural thing. But the job was a very challenging job, calling for far more talent and ability than Frank had ever really seemed to demonstrate. It called for more than he had ever done. He was afraid, but he knew that if he took the job and if all went well, that he would earn more money than he'd ever earned before, and he would give his family a freedom that they had never had. So he took a 6-month leave of absence, just to be sure. But he never had to go back to his old job. And in a short time, Frank was earning more money than the president of the company that he had left. But the thing that was important was not that Frank took another job. It was that he took with him a plan. You see, he had developed a system of working with something, and long before this time, he'd become a goal setter and achiever. He started with working with a plan for one weekend. And from that came the concept of setting goals for himself, and those goals developed a life that, and a lifestyle that has become very successful and very rewarding. Now, goals must be something that the goal setter can accept, and you can see how when Frank began, he could accept a weekend that was planned. And then in time, he could go to larger things. Everything that exists in your life or mine or upon this earth was first a thought in the mind of God and or a person or persons. And whatever you can identify with in your mind is almost sure to come into your experience. Therefore, it's important that you identify with your goals. It's important that you identify with what you want to happen rather than with what you don't want to happen, or with what has already happened. We must begin to identify with the experiences and with events that are beyond our present abilities, we think, to demonstrate. But the potential is there. The potential for fulfillment is within each one of us. Every Sunday morning, almost every Sunday, seated in the back of the room are two very bright and talented young men who happen to be medical students. Now, if you know anything about becoming a physician, you know that you have just broken off for yourself a healthy chunk of goal setting. When you set out on that task, I'm looking at two physicians right here now who are nodding their head in agreement. It's a way of life that consumes you for years and years. But a marvelous thing takes place if you are accepted at a medical school, because they have a plan for you. As a matter of fact, they have every hour planned for you every day. Don't they? He said yes, and she said yes. They do. They move you forward in increments of time and of ability. They immerse you in a system, in a language, in a philosophy, and in time, you become the thing that is your goal. You become it. Before you become a doctor, you are one. You have the consciousness of it. And when you have fulfilled the conditions, like walking the human path that you have to walk to complete those assignments, it's a long path, then one day your goal is completed. But my point is that one must become so identified with the goal and all that it is composed of, then you will have the experience of that goal. This last year I had surgery, and I shared that experience with some of you, and it was a surgery that lasted for 3 hours, and the surgeon and I had a very important conversation while he was performing the surgery, and I asked him about becoming a surgeon. And he said, well, it takes a lot of time, you know. And I asked him if he was frightened the first time that he opened an incision. And he said, no, it really doesn't happen that way. He said, what we do is we get these young people that are becoming physicians, and he said, the first time we let them into the operating room, we have them stand over in the corner, and sometimes they faint. He said, I didn't faint exactly, but the first major surgery that I watched, I felt like it. And he said, then we draw them closer, and in time they begin to participate, they're there, and maybe one day we will unexpectedly stick a scalpel in someone's hand and say, here, cut this suture. And then one day, when the student is ready, we will give them the scalpel and say, here, open at this point. And they will make their first incision. But they're ready for it. They have already developed the consciousness for that time. So you can see how in medical school there are a series of goals on a day or day-to-day plans that are laid out for that student. Now, suppose you went into real estate or some other profession that required a self-motivating consciousness. The plan is not there for you. But the principle requires the same discipline. It is the discipline. You see, medicine, among other things, is a discipline, isn't it? It requires a participation. It requires a controlled activity on the part of the individual who will be a part of that experience. This afternoon in class, I used an example of how a person with the right consciousness, a winner, with a winning consciousness, can leave this place and go anywhere upon this earth, anywhere in the United States, and immediately begin to demonstrate success. The person whose example I used was Larry Dennis. Some 3 years ago, they moved to Oregon, and Larry has the Dale Carnegie franchise for the state of Oregon. And by some strange coincidence, about an hour after I used Larry as an example, he called me from Oregon. Larry hasn't called me in 3 years. Was that a coincidence? And he said, I've got some exciting things I want to share with you, Jack. He said, so many of my goals are coming into focus right now. I wrote down a number of them, and I want to share them with you. And so he told me what some of them were. For example, he has the number one Dale Carnegie sponsorship in the world in percentage of quota. He's the leader of all of them. Larry became involved with these ideas about 20 years ago at the age of 19 when he quietly slipped into a sales and marketing executive rally in Cleveland. He was just a kid. And seated there, listening to the speakers, he said, gee, wouldn't it be great to be up on that platform? Well, 20 years later, he has the most successful Carnegie franchise. He is a person who helps many, many, many people. He's loving, sensitive, exciting, enthusiastic, and so is his wife, Donna. Last week, Larry Dennis and Bob Richards, you remember Bob Richards, the Wheaties champion? Well, they were the headliners before 1,500 executives in Portland. Guess who sponsored the rally? You guessed it. Sales and marketing executive rallies sponsored it. His dream of 20 years ago came true last week, but it's been coming true week after week after week with Larry. You see, success is the result of discovering that you can't do it by yourself alone, that not only do we need help of our contemporaries, other people like ourselves, help from a power greater than ourselves, but we must also have a system. So success is putting together a package or a system that works and then implementing through discipline or controlled behavior that system until it becomes fulfilled. Failure is also putting together a success system. Did you know that? All failures are people who have put together a success system with which to fail. And they can fail as consistently as a winner will succeed. And if failing where they are is not good enough for them, they'll go somewhere else and fail even more completely there. And give them another assignment, and they'll show you exactly how to fail quickly. As a matter of fact, they will even predict to you exactly how they will fail. People who fail want successful people to come and save them. And weak people want strong people to come and take charge for them. The irresponsible want the responsible to bring order out of the chaos that they have created. But it can never be. Being undisciplined is a way of secretly calling for rescue and stalling for time until help arrives. But there can never be enough help to rescue the undisciplined. And that's the next principle that I would like to share with you, that if you will go out into your success experience, it can only be with a disciplined mind. And this is a word that we have shied away from, almost all of us, because we have thought of discipline as something that has been imposed upon us from without, in the way that certain of our parents did when we were a child, arbitrarily saying to us, do this, whether you like it or not. Discipline, in the sense that I will use that word with you this evening, means inner control. You become your own new frontier. You realize that the only thing that you have to take charge of in this universe is your own mind and your own life. Discipline is not obedience to external power, but to an internal system that you have chosen for yourself, because you know that you must have a system if you're going to succeed, but that you must practice that system, and unless you take yourself by the back of the neck and the seat of the pants, that you will not do it. Discipline simplifies your life, and it enforces clean decisions. Discipline is remembering what you really want. Do you know how difficult it is to remember today what you promised yourself you were going to do yesterday? That's discipline. Remembering and executing, bringing forth. Someone, I think it was Patricia, gave me a copy of an article from a magazine, and I don't know the author. I would give her credit if I did. Amy Gross. Amy wrote, "A cutting-edge discipline. It divides the people I know into the sleek and the nervous. With discipline, one has a handle on life. Without it, one is constantly burning one's hand on the pot. With discipline, one comes as close to having a fairy godmother as real life allows. One has a technique for reaching from wish to fulfillment. Without discipline, one can only stack a window shopper at the good things in life. The undisciplined, those scattered wretches, are trapped in limbo. Half working, one quarter reading a magazine, one eighth wondering if they mailed that letter, one eighth deciding that another cup of coffee will help. Dr. Robert Schuller wrote, "Possibility thinking makes miracles happen. And the greatest power in the world is the power of possibility thinking. If your dream has come from God, then you need only to exercise this miracle-working power, and you can reach the seemingly unattainable goal. Believe me, I know," Dr. Schuller said. Now, you've been working on establishing your goals, and you've asked for God, as you understand God, this infinite intelligence within you, to help you to establish your goals. And so they've already been firmly established in your mind. They're on your goal-achieving list. Now, so far, so good. But at this point, you're about to confront your biggest problem, you. The hardest part now is to make yourself really believe that the apparently enormous goal that you have established for yourself is somehow, some way, somewhere attainable. And don't believe that you believe this yet, because you don't. You're beginning to believe it. Oh, I believe, but God help my unbelief. Help me to be disciplined. Help me to bring forward each day into consciousness a memory of what I believe, and then to increase it and to get the feeling for it. Now, you can achieve any goal that you have established as long as you let go of your impossibility thinking. And all of us have had impossibility thinking. And impossibility thinking will cause you to do nothing about your goal. You will not go into action. You will not do what you need to do, and consequently, you will fail. In the book All About Goals, Jack Addington wrote a story, or he printed a letter that was sent to him by Vera. For 20 years, Vera had dreamed about taking a vacation to Hawaii. How many times she thought about it, it was her heart's desire. But she gave herself a long list of reasons why it could not happen. First of all, it was too expensive. And she didn't have time, you understand that. She had a family, she couldn't leave home, and she was the office manager, and they surely could not do without her for the 2 weeks that it would take for her to go to Hawaii. And she had many reasons. She was an impossibility thinker. And then she learned about goal setting. And she wrote to Jack, "Last week I wrote down this goal, visualized it, expressed my gratitude, my thanks for it, and actually had the feeling now that at long last I was going to Hawaii. Oh, I was going to Hawaii. Last night, just 1 week later, my employers called me and said that our company had won a trip to Hawaii in January for 8 days, all expenses paid, and they wanted me to go. Now, I've worked in dealerships for the past 25 years and have seen many, many trips won from manufacturers, but never have I known a dealer to offer a trip to a female office manager. This was indeed God's answer to my dream and my desire, and I am so very grateful." For 20 years, she exercised her impossibility thinking, and she achieved her goal. She did not go because she said, "I cannot go. That was my goal, to not go to Hawaii. I want to go, but I know I can't." And so she didn't. Within hours or days of the time that she began to believe in possibility thinking, it happened out of the blue in an extraordinary way. Is that unusual? No. Dr. Maxwell Maltz wrote in Psycho-Cybernetics, "Your built-in success mechanism must have a goal or target. This goal or target must be conceived of as already in existence now, either in actual or potential form. It operates by either, one, steering you to a goal already in existence, or by discovering something already in existence. The automatic mechanism is teleological, that is, it operates or must be oriented to end results, to goals. Do not be discouraged because the means whereby may not be apparent. It is the function of the automatic mechanism to supply the means whereby when you supply the goal. Think in terms of the end result, and the means whereby will take care of itself. You see, you and I have been so caught up in the means whereby that we lost our goal. And you lose your goal if you get caught up in the means whereby. A goal is something that you set and that you establish, and you bring it into the now consciousness, knowing that it is the responsibility of divine intelligence, of a power greater than yourself, to create the means whereby. The means whereby is not important to you. Don't let it be important to you, because the means whereby will cause you to become an impossibility thinker. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you want to practice impossibility thinking, then try to figure out how you're going to fulfill your goal, and you can't do it. But keep your eye on your goal, knowing that the means whereby will come to pass, and in the most amazing way, it will happen to you. It always does. Some people never realize their goals because they make them too vague. And they have no commitment. They make no decision. In a column last week by Neil Solomon, he talked about a large group of large people who wanted to lose weight and did so. And they lost an extraordinary amount of weight in an extraordinary short period of time, and maintained that weight loss for more than 2 years, and were continuing to maintain it. And this extraordinary group of people were examined by a group who discovered that the thing that made them extraordinary was that most of these people made a commitment to at least two people and had a specific weight loss goal in mind in the beginning of their weight loss. In other words, they had a conscious shock. They were embarrassed at some special moment because of their overweight. And in that shock, in that embarrassment, it was like hitting the bottom for an alcoholic. They made a commitment of the whole being and followed through with a discipline to achieve a predetermined goal that they did not lose sight of. And the whereby, the weight loss seemed to happen. They did not have to have all of the extraordinary backup techniques that others practiced, and even in the practicing did not always succeed. A commitment, a definite goal, not at all vague. You must know where you're going and see the end result and know that you're going there. Let the chips fall where they may. Remember to always think of and to feel your goal in the present tense. You recall when Rocco Errico was here, he's the great Bible scholar and teacher that comes to visit us at least once a year. He told us that the Aramaic language, the language of Jesus, was all in the present tense. It had no past or future tense. For example, the Lord's Prayer is written in the present tense. And Jesus said to his followers, "What things soever you desire, whatever you have set as your goal, when you pray, believe that you already receive them, and you shall have them." Assume the feeling of the wish fulfilled. Bring it into the now moment, the present tense. Goals are not future tense. Do not think of your goal as something that you're going to achieve, because if you're going to achieve it, you never will. It is something that is already achieved. The end result is there. The whereby will take place in time, and that's usually none of your business. Oh, you will have a plan, and you will work with your plan, but you will be amazed at how a superintelligence will be working with you to help your plan unfold. By all means, set goals beyond your goals as you move forward, and you will be moving forward into a series of delightful and exciting events. Set other goals. Also, you will find that there will be obstacles in your path. Some of those obstacles will be in the form of people. People you've known for a long time. People that you thought were your friends. They will not want you to achieve your goals. Because if you are in movement, if you're in motion and they're static, they cannot stand that. And they will want to pull you back into the static condition that they occupy, which is their goal. And frequently, it will be your experience that you will have to set them free. And if you're not able or ready or capable of eliminating from your life all things that stand in the way of obtaining your goal, then be prepared to fail. Let that goal rest, because you will not achieve it. Anything that is not consistent with your goal, whether it be an idea, a thought, an emotion, words in your vocabulary, or people in your life, if they're not consistent with your goal, then be prepared to separate yourself from them if you will be a real achiever in life and one who moves forward through a series of dynamic experiences. Ralph Waldo Emerson was only one of hundreds of great voices who have said, "Nothing great was ever accomplished without enthusiasm." Enthusiasm. Oh, how I love the word. My friend Larry Dennis signs his letters enthusiastically. Can't you feel it? He lives his life enthusiastically. How are you living your life? Enthusiastically. Or enthusiastically. Well, enthusiasm turns on the switch that connects you to the power of the universe. Many a person has lost their goal when they lost their enthusiasm for it. And as you move forward, maintain your enthusiasm, increase it, generate it, and you will always be able to accomplish your dreams with enthusiasm. Possibility thinking is the maximum utilization of the God-given powers that are resident within you. It is knowing that all things are possible to him who is within me. If you have seen me, you have seen God going into action. It is my Father's good pleasure to give me the kingdom, and I'm going out to find it. Enthusiastically. With excitement. It's believing that God has unlimited financial resources and unlimited intelligence to achieve his goals. Possibility thinking is simply opening your mind and opening your life to that power that will surge through you, and believing that God performs miracles in the lives of people who, being unafraid of failure and public embarrassment, move boldly and bravely forward, attempting big things for themselves, all credit and all glory going to God. And if you would like to achieve big things for yourself and for the people that you love, know that nothing is impossible, because you're the rich child of a loving Father. And all that the Father has is yours to share and to experience. There's no delay. That which is not for my highest good fades from me, and I no longer desire it. My God-given desires are richly fulfilled now in God's own wonderful way. I am a child of the universe. Thank you, Father. And so it is, my beautiful friends.